If you're sick of having to wade through 2 hours of fluff in order to get a few good takeaways, tune into the Art of Manliness podcast. We glean and distill the very best insights from the world's experts in self-improvement, philosophy, practical skills, history, and more. And we do so in under an hour without the eye-roll-inducing filler. You walk away from every episode of the Art of Manliness podcast with actionable insights you could start implementing today in order to improve your life. Check out great episodes that I enjoy, like the cues that make you more charismatic and how to avoid death by comfort. Available wherever you get your podcast on your favorite podcast player. Of course, if you want to improve your life, listen to the Art of Manliness podcast today. Indulge in the past with History on the Rocks, the podcast that brings you the fascinating tales of lesser-known history while you get ready for the weekend with your favorite drink in hand. Join Cody and Audrey as they uncork the stories that time forgot. From famous people like George Washington and his distillery to pirate queens causing mayhem on the high seas, each episode is a journey through the ages with endless possibilities. Give us a follow on Facebook and Instagram to keep up with the news about the latest episodes. So grab a glass, enjoy, relax, and join us every Thursday for History on the Rocks, the History on the Rocks podcast, where you'll learn about the past while sipping in the present. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcast. That's History on the Rocks. Learn about the past while sipping in the present. Please welcome in our new sponsor, Underdog Fantasy. Go to underdogfantasy.com and you'll discover that Underdog Fantasy is the best and easiest place to play fantasy sports. Underdog Fantasy lets you draft a fantasy dream team in minutes. Sign up now with the code POWERTRIP and you'll double your first deposit up to $100 in bonus cash when you make your first deposit of $10 or more. That's right, deposit $100 and get $100 for free. Underdog keeps it simple with their easy-to-use website and mobile apps. Pick between 2 and 5 players to fill out your pick'em slip, get every pick right, and take home some cold, hard cash. Use that promo code POWERTRIP and get your first deposit doubled up by $100 by Underdog. That's underdogfantasy.com. Use the promo code POWERTRIP today.
The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
What's up, guys? It's the phenomenal AJ Styles. You're listening to the two-man power trip.
Hey, Johnny. Cool, man. What's going on? We ready to go or what?
Okay.
Hello and welcome to the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. I'm your host, JP John Paz. With me today, very special guest, former national heavyweight champion, former world-class championship wrestling heavyweight champion, two-time CWA heavyweight champion. Of course, he is known as Black Bart. Black, welcome to the Two Man Power Trip. How you doing?
How y'all doing, guys? You doing okay? Everything's pretty good here. Kicking, still grabbing, still getting it. Doing the best we can do with the good Lord.
Yes. What is going on in your world? What is going on with the latest with your book, Wrestle?
I don't know, move it one way or another. But hey, you got one too. My book's doing pretty dead gum good. It's a good read from what I can tell. My wife really loved it. She laughed and cried, and she's heard the stories over and over and over, but still got her pretty good. Laughed out loud, belly laughed a couple times, you know. So that made me proud just to get to her because she went through most of it with me, more especially here in the latter part of my career, fighting cancer, and I went through 25 sessions of radiation and doing the chemo along with the radiation, this makes you sicker than a dog. I ain't had neither in about a little over 2 weeks. And I still ain't got it out of my system. I had a rough night last night. I was up most of the night, but the overall thing is to get it out of my system. On the 20th of this month, I'm going to have MRI. And then on the 29th, I go see my head surgeon, the head doctor, the head dude in charge, and get them all together in one big group, and then we're going to decide what they're going to do to old Black Bart. See what we're going to do. We're either going to have surgery, or we're going to have more chemo or more radiation. I hope it ain't both of them never again together at the same time. But if it is, then I'm going to do it. I'm going to do whatever it takes to try to get it out of me the best way I can. But with that being said about my chemo and everything, you know, I'm kicking. I rung the bell. I did a video ringing the bell down there to the hospital when they did that and when I finished it, and I guess you get to ring the bell if you're alive after you finish it, you get to ring the bell. But I rung the bell and I broke out in the referee's position. I wanted to lock up with somebody, but I didn't have, they're all scared to death of me, I guess. I don't know. But I'm glad that part is over with. Very, very, very glad that part is over with. And thank God for giving me the strength and the endurance to get through it. It's one of the toughest things I've ever done. I'm sure I got tougher things coming, but my belief in the good Lord and with all my prayers and people praying for me and helping me, you don't know how much that it's appreciated on this end. I don't know how to thank everybody other than to say, hey, thanks. I appreciate it. And God bless each and every one of y'all for praying for Bart. Cause I need all the prayers I can get. You know what I mean, brother? But,
absolutely.
The book, when I accomplish a lot of things in my life. I've accomplished dead gum. I've wrestled two bears. I beat one of them. We're all wrestling to a draw. I didn't beat him. I wrestled him to a draw. And, He is, the Bears ain't in the book. It'll be in the next one, I guess. But a lot of stuff that's in this book is road stories and stories about other wrestlers, and it's all good stuff. It ain't no dirt in there, I don't think. A whole lot anyway. Maybe a little bit here and there. You're gonna have to read it, find out for sure, because I ain't gonna tell you. You're gonna buy one and read the dadgum thing. Maybe by doing that, you'll get to see a little inside of Black Bart that you ain't never heard of, you ain't never seen before. But I pretty much laid it all out in the ring. When I was in the ring, I believed that you got in there, you wrestled, and you poured all your guts out, and you left 110% in the ring. And if you didn't come back to the dressing room, just get in your car and go home because you didn't do your job. I firmly believe that you, in any situation, you got to give 110%, 120%. And this fight against cancer, in my book, go hand in hand. I never think I would ever look down and have a book with my name on it and about my life, you know, and stories and things that happened in my life. But I did, and I have, and I'm glad that I got it. When I got it, look down in there, it's just hard to explain the feeling of having your own book. It's more especially with the education I had. I had a football education. My education was only got an education because I played football, so to speak. It's the way it was back in the 70s and early 70s, 71, 72. The athletes, if you failed a test, you got the test in the dressing room, and they brought you the book, and you went through there and found all the answers, and then they give you 75. They pass you. Pretty much that's the way it was, you know. And I hope that's changed, but I mean, I'm just now learning to spell words. Certain words, I have to have help spelling because I can't break them down. I guess something like that anyway. But everything piling up, you know, getting again you and you got to push back, and pushing back meaning, you know, that to me the book is the biggest accomplishment that I have ever done. National championship, world class heavyweight champion, or world class heavyweight tag team champions with several guys. Johnny Hawk, which is Layfield, and a whole bunch of guys, you know, that Wild Bill Irwin was one of my partners. But to look down and see this book was just more of an accomplishment than anything that I have ever accomplished in my life. Just looking down and opening that box, and there's my book. You know, I said, wow, Black Bart's got a book. Holy cow. But, you know,
how did it come about?
You going to get in on any of this?
Oh, yeah, yeah. How did it come about? Like, how did you, like, start writing the book, and how did Vinny Berry, who's co-wrote it with you, how did he come along and get you to do the book?
Vinny is a godsend for me, because he was, I don't think we did it the traditional way. It wasn't done that way, but I told the stories and put them on tape. And then, he actually just took my stories and put it in words and put it in paper and, you know, made the stories out of it. I said 100 times, I said, I feel like as I was going through my life, Vinny was in my front pocket. All my shirts always have a little front pocket. I said, Vinny, you lived inside my shirt telling these stories like you're me, you know. And he turns into me. He turns into Black Bart. So, and I used to be a little bit more spunky than I had the last 7, 8, 9 weeks, but Yeah, he does a good Black Bart, real good Black Bart. he's a godsend. Finney's a godsend. He put it all on and then sat and listened to it all again and again and again and again and again until he had it. And he put it in the book form. Benny worked his butt off on this book. So did I, but mine was more trying to remember everything and everybody and, you know, that kind of stuff. But Vinny's a godsend. I don't want to blow his head up too much, but because I know he's listening. I don't want to blow his head up too much because his head's big enough as already is.
I know you've been to basically every territory. You've been all over the map and stuff. When you're actually putting a book together, is it hard to like almost go through and relive your life? Because you're like, I started here. You know, I wrestled for JCP, World Class. I mean, is it hard to do that and go through everything?
It was very, very hard. More especially for me to put dates on it and to put, pick my brain and put dates on it and say, this happened in 74, this happened in 75. Some of it was real easy because I think about it all the time, but some of it remembering was real hard. And some of it, I didn't remember. I mean, some of it, I honestly don't remember. I was taking a lot of bumps, was pretty much stayed drunk. Pretty much all the time, was always drinking. The other stuff, the dope, comes into play and plays on your mind and takes your brain cells and all kinds of, you know. Through it all, you say, you know, you got to say, okay, that's enough of that. I can't. That's no good. Don't do that. Don't do drugs. Don't do drugs. Leave drugs alone. If somebody's got to do them, let somebody else do them. Don't put the drugs thing, because it's heavy and it's hard to pull out of. It's hard to get over. It's hard to just. It's hard to say when. And I hit a little bit in the book about that, but I mean, all of us, every one of the wrestlers had a crutch. Mine was alcohol. The pain. And that, you know, the pain never went away. We was always looking for a stronger pain medicine to where we could keep going and keep wrestling and keep making them memories, man. And where you can forget them all, you know, you get dropped on your head and you lose 2 or 3 years of your life, you know. Oh, I don't know. He's okay. He just had got a knot on his head. No, you just lost 2 years of your memory, you know. And then to go back and try to dig it out of your head and dig it out of the closet in your head. So, you know, it's hard. It was hard. A lot of it was easy, but a lot more of it was harder than easy. Guarantee it. So
you've been, like I said, everywhere. And it's crazy. Like just looking through the career. Okay. World Class, obviously a little bit of Mid-South, UWF, a little mixed in, obviously WWF, WCW even. But if you look back and you look like, okay, like who you wrestled, like, wow, Sting literally just retired. And God, you wrestled him almost 40 years ago. So it's like, wow, Sting just retired after 40 years in the ring. What's like your thoughts just on Sting, the retirement, and even going back that far wrestling basically in the late 80s against the Stinger?
Sting called me. He found out I had cancer, and he called me to make sure that I was right with God. And I started preaching to Sting, but I didn't believe that it was Sting. You know, Sting calling me, because we're from the old school, brother, and we don't call each other unless we're making rides with each other, going, making trips together, doing something. You know, or we don't call each other. We don't call each other at all. We still love each other. But we just don't call, you know. And Sting called me, and he, you know, and we talked for 20, 25 minutes. And Sting was, I didn't believe that it was him. And I had a picture of a little 5x7 picture of me. Sting has got me in an arm bar, and there's more pain on my, I have Sting in an arm bar, and there's more pain on my face than on his face. You understand what I'm saying? And I said, he is describing that match. And I'm listening to him describe what I'm looking at on my table, on my tabletop, same match. And I said, "Stay, what are you doing, brother?" You know, all that went on, you know, but, I got Sting when, he was, Blade Runners. He was with, Bill Watts out of Louisiana Territory. And, super, super nice kid. And, still is the very day. It didn't blow him up. It didn't go to his head, you know? So yeah, Sting was, and still is a good friend of mine. So
I love that he called you and was checking in on you and everything. That's pretty, what a stand up guy, big time.
He really, really, really was, really did. And a lot of them, Johnny, I know him as Johnny Hawk, but Johnny Layfield, I didn't train Johnny. I polished Johnny to get him ready to go in front of big crowds and get him polished where he could go have these big giant matches that he had. And he had some big ones, you know, he had some good ones. And Johnny was, Johnny is one of my bestest friends in the business. I mean, we talk. I'm going to be on his podcast Wednesday night. Wednesday, whenever it is. I don't know when it's coming up, but it's coming up real soon. And Vinny's going to be mad at me because I ain't pushing a book. But I'm pushing my book, y'all. I'm talking about my career. But, yeah, Johnny, me and Johnny talk a lot, talk back and forth a lot. We rib with each other a lot, done a lot of stuff. But I ain't telling none of the stories because it's gonna be more coming out. Maybe, I hope, if I'm physically able to do it.
What did you think about John Hawk, Bradshaw, JBL, John Layfield back then? Because obviously became a huge star, became WWF champion for almost 300 days. What did you think of him then? And then what did you think about kind of what he turned into? Because he turned into one of the biggest stars of WWF in the ruthless aggression era.
Johnny's a good guy, man. Super nice guy. Actually deserved everything he got. A lot of guys in the business didn't deserve it, but he actually deserved everything that he's got. And like my hat's off to him, brother. I don't know if I worked WWF and I was brought in there as a jobber, but on top jobber. There's a difference between being a jobber and being underneath jobber and on top jobber. I made dead gum good money. And, but here again, that goes back to me and my old lady at the time. We didn't save nothing. We thought we'd wrestle forever. You know, we never thought, you know, that Black Bart would have cancer it didn't enter into our thought. It didn't enter into, we'd wrestle forever. When you couldn't wrestle no more, you'd be a manager or you'd be setting up the ring. You'd be doing something to have something to do with wrestling your whole life, which pretty much it has. I'm still doing towns and not doing towns, but handling the locker rooms, handling the guys. All the guys respect me, and we always have a good time. Got one coming up in got a match that's coming up on the 16th in Joshua, Texas at Thunder. It's called Thunder Alley. I'll be running the back. I'll be running the guys and running the matches, making sure they're getting run good, smooth. Everything goes good. That's on the 16th. We got more coming up after that. I can't remember. I should have wrote the dates down, but I didn't. I think it's March the 3rd. We're doing Gilmer again, Gilmer, Texas. Then after that, there's more dates coming up there in that building. There's more dates coming up. I mean, I'm still, like I said, I'm not out of wrestling, and I want until they so-called put dirt on my face in my grave, you know, then yeah, that ain't going to happen either. Cause I'm donating my body to science. So with that being said, I'm donating mine. Everything's going to science, maybe help cure cancer, help kill cancer, just beat the living hoo-hoo out of cancer. And I've got the paperwork and everything, and we're going to get it done. I think you have to die first, though, but you got to fill out the paperwork before you die. Right. I got the paperwork. It ain't a grim subject to me because it's a win-win situation for me. If I stay here, I get to stay with my grandson and my wife and my niece. And if I drop dead right now, I'm doing a nip up and going straight to heaven. Straight up, brother. Straight up.
Now, you mentioned WWF and that run basically in 1990. You said underneath jobber versus an on-top jobber. What does that mean technically, though? Like, obviously, like, you lose a lot on TV, but you do get wins. Like, you're beating Coco, you're beating Jim Powers. Like, you will get wins over some of the guys. What was the time like in WWF?
I thought that I had a lot worse record than what I had. And I looked at the same thing you looked at. And I think I was batting 500. I won as many matches as I lost. In other words, I was batting 500. And I said, dadgum, I don't remember doing nothing but jobs. But brother, you go up there as a top jobber. You're doing on their TVs alone. I wrestled nine times on TV in one building, nine times in front of the same crowd now. And I told Dave Hepner, Earl Hepner, I said, you need to get this back to Vince. I don't know how you're going to get it back there, but you need to take this back there to him. And I'm done. I ain't doing no more jobs. I may want to be on top coming here in another territory, you know? So I'm done. I ain't doing no more jobs. But I found out I won as many matches as I lost. So I was batting 50-50, 500s. That's good. But the difference is, you know, you're doing a job for Randy Savage. Brother, you don't have to hang your head low at all, even to be honored that they'll put you in the ring with one of their top guys, knowing that guy is not going to get hurt. He's not going to get jumped on. He's going to say, I'm a worker. I always have been a worker. And we'll die a worker. And I mean, some of the best workers in the business, Ricky Steamboat, right at the top. I mean, tip top, right at the top of the list is Ricky Steamboat, Dusty Rhodes, guys that you don't even feel them when you're in the ring. I was one of those guys. I'm rated right up there amongst them, you know, and, to have me was into what we called a night off. You know, you got to work, you got paid, and you didn't get hurt. You know, that was a plus. That's all a win-win situation. You know, but being a top guy, when you're doing a job, you come in, you're doing just regular jobs, you're just jobbing ever for everybody. Well, yes, you do more jobs. You do more. You get to win to make your credibility, to make you credible, and then they put you. You know, and then you do a job. Man, it's that simple. Making good money too, doing it. Great money. Wish I'd save.
Yeah, I wish you save some. How did you get in though? Is it because of Dusty? Did Dusty Rhodes bring you in? Because I know you're like a tried and true Dusty guy, right?
Dusty Rhodes come way later in my career. I've been in the business 15, 20 years before Dusty Rhodes gave me my big push. But I'm including job time, you know, and paying dues. I graduated high school. And then as soon as that, I went to Howard Payne University, and then went to, from there, a buddy of mine called me and said they opened up a school of professional wrestling in Dallas, Texas. I said, sign me up. He went down there. Not only did he sign me up, he signed himself up. He become a referee. His name is Rick Miller. He become a referee and running towns, and I become a wrestler. And Rick paid for all that. And I said, Rick, I appreciate it, brother. You don't know how much I appreciate it. He's got almost identically the same kind of cancer I got. We growed up together. We went to elementary school together. Good, very, very, very close friend of mine. Started running towns. Well, I started running towns. When we start running towns, you're a wrestler, as far as I'm concerned. You start taking bumps, you're a wrestler. I wasn't on taking bumps. I set up the ring, tearing down the ring down, loading it up and going to the next town, you know, from Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And we was wrestling all out in East Texas and having a good time, running up down the roads like a bunch of banshees. Selling things. Nobody knew none of us, but we sell that almost every building we did. We sold it out. It was unbelievable. I could not believe that you would make money doing wrestling business. The wrestling.
Dusty didn't get you in the WWF in 90. That was someone else that got you in WWF?
No, he had nothing to do with it. I was in Pensacola, Florida. I just went to work for Bob Armstrong and Robert Fuller in that Pensacola territory. Well, Dusty called me. I guess I've been in there for about 8 or 9 months, maybe a little bit longer. I ain't real good about the dates, but Dusty called me then, and this is in 80. I'm very bad on dates. But anyway, I was in Pensacola. I was an Alabama heavyweight champion. And Dusty said, you want you to come up here? I'm going to change your gimmick, put Black Bart on you. And told me what to get, told me everything to get, to buy, to do, and come bring my butt on. I went up there and I become Black Bart. And this is, I want to say 81, but it was in 81, 82, somewhere around in there. And me and my wife, Bonnie, was together. Bonnie's dead now. But she's gone. Me and Linda, my wife, Linda, got married, and we happily ever after, so to speak. But Dusty called me and told me to come down there and Black Bart. I've been on as Black Bart ever since. And they come later on in my career. Later, I want to say 83, 84. Anyway, during that heyday down there, we selling out every dead gum thing we touched. Me and Ron Bass, J.J. Dillon, the Long Riders, Mike Maniac, Mike Davis, I think Buzz Sawyer come in and out of there. Black Jack Mulligan, Barry Windham, Yellow Dog, his little brother, Kendall Windham. They had a heck of a crew, a heck of a territory, made real good money up to Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Rings went, and then we said, see you. We all left. Every one of us went to Carolinas. But anyway.
It seems like you and Dusty do have like a long history. Obviously, he's creating the Black Bart gimmick. He's bringing you along, but he brings you along for Starrcade when Starrcade starts, especially Starrcade 84, eventually WWF, PWF, WCW, right? I mean, you and Dusty have a long history. What's the friendship like, or what was it like?
We met and when I was a jobber in the Carolinas, okay? And after he gave me the Black Bart gimmick, anytime I needed a place to work, all I had to do is pick up the phone, call Dusty, and I had a job. Okay. But back then there's a lot of territories. Now there ain't no territories. So now you either work for Vince McMahon or you work for AEW or you don't work. You know, you just do little spot jobs and stuff like that. Little Saturday night. Warrior, so to speak, but yeah, we were friends, and I was around him quite a bit. But we, as far as him being my boss back then, he was just one of the boys. We were just palling around together and drinking cold beers. Me, him, Dick Murdoch, and Ray Stevens, and guys like that. You know, that's a pretty good group of guys right there. But and then finally he calls me. He gave me the big break. He gave me the big break that made me go for it. Really go for it. Really, really go for it. But all right. Okay. Well, we're done.
No. I love that gimmick though, Black Bart. Great job by him. Obviously, he's an old, old fan of those like old westerns. It's just like the perfect thing. Even the Long Riders, and obviously you've end up feuding eventually with Ron Bass as well. But the Long Riders is a cool thing. It's like an old western kind of awesome, cool heel gimmick.
We did a sitcom western Ghost Riders in looking for Stan Hansen. Kind of turned out to be a big joke because of some, but I don't want to. I'm not even going to go there. But we did a Western. They rented a town, $175,000 a day to rent this ghost town in this Western town. And we done that, and it aired on TBS, and it was supposed to have been sold to Fox, and never happened. But with that being said,
so as far as like successful territories and like the biggest success, obviously with Dusty, when you're in Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, when you're in JCP, obviously big success. But I think maybe your biggest success might have came from World Class down there in Dallas, Texas. And obviously you worked in Texas forever. I mean, when they did NWA Dallas, you came back for that. They had that CWA league. You did that global. You did that. So obviously Dallas and Black Bart is kind of, I'd say, maybe your biggest success. Would you agree?
I agree 100%. I can't say a whole lot about the guys that I was wrestling, which was the Von Erichs. Other than, you know, they were good kids. They were good guys, man. And, they had problems as it shows, they had problems, and, the problems that they had, in their minds, they couldn't be solved. But yeah, to me, having that world, getting that world heavyweight strap to me was a highlight of my career. I mean, how many wrestlers can say, you know, I've been a world heavyweight champion? How many wrestlers can say I was a world heavyweight champion in probably one of the toughest territories to work in that there ever was? Meaning, you get your butt handed to you if you ain't careful. Not to mention having to put up with the Von Erichs and all their stuff they done, and it was an accomplishment that I never knew. I never seen it coming. I walked into Real Rogers Coliseum. George Scott dropped the world strap on my butt, on my bag, and said, "You're the champ." That's the truth. The candy coating is that I beat Chris Adams. I beat Chris Adams in El Paso, Texas, or some damn place for it. And that was a fabrication, because they had to fabricate it, because he got deported on a plane. He slapped co-pilot and got deported back to England for his trouble. Bye-bye, Chris. Hello, Black Bart. Yeah, that's the way it works. That's the way our business works. And I'm not one, you know, I stepped right in there. I stepped up to the plate, and I believe I hit several home runs, bro. Several home runs. I smashed it. But that was one of my biggest accomplishments. And then to keep doing it night after night after night was wrestling 7 days a week. And some guys said it was easy wrestling here. Well, if you had the full schedule, it wasn't easy, brother, because you did some mileage here just like everywhere else. This was, you did some mileage here. You could be booked in Houston and be booked in San Antonio, not San Antonio. You could be booked in El Paso and booked, you know, that's 500 stinking miles one way. You know, but with the Von Erichs, it's a different style of wrestling. It's a different, you know, sometimes you had to put the holds on yourself. You had to put side headlock, you know, put holds on yourself. But all in all, it worked out, and they were all good boys. Kevin's, you know, I love Kevin. I've actually managed a couple of times against his boys, with him managing and me managing out on the coast of Texas. Big show out there. Yeah.
Pretty awesome. Like, to kind of see that full circle. Obviously Kevin beat you for that title back all the way in 86, but you know, managing against his boys, very much a full circle moment. His boys, I mean, his boys are pretty good.
Not bad at all, from what I can see. I mean, I ain't never locked up with one of them. That's the truth. To lock up with one of them, that tells you the true, if they're, how stiff they are, stuff like that. But I want to mention Mike Von Erich, because I went back after Carolinas. I was coming back in something anyway. I was wrestling in a little building on the way back. Got booked in out there in Louisiana, and it had to be 135 degrees outside. It's in the swamp, and inside that building, in that ring, it was ungodly. But I looked down. I had him down, and I looked down, and he had that scar on his shoulder right here. And I asked Rick Hazard. Was a referee. I said, "Rick," I said, is this the kid that just had the shock syndrome? And the Von Erich that just had it? He says, "Yeah." I said, "And we done been like 20 minutes and it's soaping, sopping, but poured water on us. It's so hot in this building. We're sweating so bad, brother." I took and picked that kid up. I flipped him over, put him down for a slam, did a flip over the top of him, reached, pulled him up over top of me, and said, "Count." Said, "You better count 1, 2, 3 right now. 1, 2, 3. He asked me, "Well, why do you do that?" And I said, "Well, brother, one of the main things is they have to stand." I said, I don't want to kill Von Erich, you know. I said that he just got out the hospital, man, and he looked like, you know, he looked it too. He looked bad. So I ended the match right there. It was done. It was done. Hazard laughed. But anyway.
Scary though, like that they put him out there like that.
Yeah, put him. They did, and it's scary. You know, they just throw him under the bus. Here it is. You go do it.
when you look at obviously if Devon Erickson, all that tragedy, it's just it's crazy to think. I mean, they're the most over guys in that territory, but then it's one tragedy after another after another. Then, like you said, Adams gets deported. Gino Hernandez passes away. Gino Hernandez. It just was crazy, world class, how much tragedy that they had to deal with down there.
The territory. I mean, it pretty much took the territory out. I mean, as far as surviving running territory, we were running. They were running the Sportatorium. They was running Real Rogers Coliseum, and during the week they filled that up with spot shows in between. And spot shows that we run every once a month or once every 2 months, ever how they worked that out. I don't know how. Had to be a mastermind behind that, but they were class act to work for, I'm telling you. They were something else. Something else.
What about the Dingo Warrior? What about the Ultimate Warrior? Because I know you worked him down there. Just what are your thoughts of working him, and what did you think about Dingo Warrior, Ultimate Warrior?
Gathering them up. We weren't friends by no means, but I always said about that boy, and maybe I shouldn't have said, but he forgot more about wrestling than he'll ever remember. So, with that being said, he could run down there, shake that rope, jump over in the ring, shake the rope, and you better be ready to go home, because that's about the end of his repertoire. Other than tatered up, I mean, had a good punch. He tatered the TPP out of you. He'd knock that fire right bark off that butt. Don't even think he wouldn't. But Dingo was a good guy. He didn't become as he grew, and you know that gimmick was going to get over because it was crazy, crazy, crazy stuff, you know. And Dingo got better at being nice. I guess is the word, being nicer. Every time you seen him, it seemed like he got a little bit nicer. Hey, the boy's going the right direction, you know. So he go to the ring, shake it, boom, bam, boom. He sells out Madison Square Garden, sells out everything he touches. Well, you can't. How do you knock that? You know, you can't knock that. Warrior was a good dude, man. Warrior was a good dude.
What was your most successful territory as far as financially? What was the best place to go? Would it be world class or no?
No, it wasn't world class by no means. No, it was WWF. I can give you some numbers, but I ain't giving you no numbers because I don't want you to expect to what we blew. You know, me and my old lady blew. Me and Bonnie, we blew it. You know, we had opportunity. I'll put it like this. We had opportunity to become millionaires and didn't. But we had a 7 or 8 bedroom home out in Fort Myers, Florida, with every kind of fruit tree that you can imagine, every kind of a pond, a big giant pond, a little lake, in other words, full of bass. That I had them named. I go out there and catch them by name. Okay? By name, I catch them. And we had greyhounds. We was running greyhounds, racing greyhounds. Had my own two. And that we paid $2,900 a month rent. We wouldn't rent. Yeah. Stupid kids. And I'm talking about Black Bart now. You know, should have sat down and said, hey, listen, you know, Akbar tried, beg me, Bart, do money market, put your money in money market accounts. I'd go, Bonnie, hey, come on, let's, no, we'll wrestle forever. You know that. Okay. We'll wrestle forever. Yeah. Not.
Yeah, that doesn't work out like that for sure. Now, how come the end of the run of WWF is like a short run, basically most of 90 and maybe a little bit of sprinkled into 1991?
13 months. I don't know how long y'all was there. See, I didn't just wrestle after he gave me my notice. He gave me my notice, and this is all in the book. But he gave me my notice. I become like a talent agent for for Titan Sports, okay? And Texas, Louisiana, New Mexico, Oklahoma. This four state area right here. They were here. I brought eight or nine guys, jobbers, to the arenas, and I was still getting the same money I was when I was wrestling, doing this, doing that. I was on all the big shows. I was at WrestleMania that year. I cut an interview for it. I don't know whatever happened to the interview, but I'm sure they got it locked up somewhere. They still show my matches on that dadgum. They show all that, which I've never received one penny for nothing for that. But yeah, my highest paid territory was WWE. My highest paid territory that I actually had fun in was Florida Championship Wrestling. Then World Class. Then it would be the NWA out in the Carolinas. The old territory. I'm talking about the old territory. But yeah, other than that, you know, that and that's weird. That's the first time I've ever been asked that kind of questions about that.
What was the big train, Bart? What was that? Because you came back to WCW. I'm guessing maybe Dusty brought you in. What was that gimmick? What was that all about? Because that was, I guess, 95-ish, but strange gimmick for you.
It was, I was just talking about Fuller a while ago. Fuller was in there as the manager, and he had two cowboys already in there. In the Black Bart Duster, the Black Bart everything. They dressed just like me. Well, they wouldn't let me come back in there. I was living in Greenville, South Carolina. You know, that ain't very far from Atlanta TV. And I went up there because I wanted to be around a little bit of wrestling, you know, just a little bit. I was a foreman on paint crew, painting houses. And I've always worked doing something. I don't care what it was. I was a construction worker. But, they said, no, Bart, you can't come in as Black Bart. We already got cowboy gimmicks in here, but you can come in as big. You can come in as big train Bart. I said, do what? Gonna change? You know, I said, then I did that job for Inferno, the Flaming Inferno. Well, he was a Flaming Inferno. All right. I did a 1-2-3 for him. I went back. Iron Anderson, which I had got Iron Anderson his damn job. Okay, he met me at the dressing room door, and I told him, I said, let me tell you something, buddy. I quit. That's it. I ain't never quit a territory in my life. I've never walked. I've never done anything wrong. But Iron, I said, that was wrong, and you know it. I could beat that guy in my sleep. In 10 seconds. And I think him and Iron wound up getting in a big old fight fuss themselves. I don't know if it was over that, but they wound up fighting at a motel or something. I don't know how. I don't know. Inferno was kind of stupid. Well, I don't want to call him stupid. Ain't nobody stupid, but he was a goofball. He was a meathead.
Yeah, so losing to Disco Inferno. Really, you only wrestled, I think, him, Benoit, and were a part of World War III, and then Big Train Bart is basically gone.
Well, cool. Well, after when you, the following weekend, I wrestled Inferno. I believe, and then that was it. I was gone. But the match with they got mad at me for the match with Benoit, because me and Benoit went out there and stole the show. They couldn't follow it. Irons met me at the door again, just screaming, you killed. Well, we're going to make him a four horseman. You take that four horseman. I said, Iron, take that four horseman crap and stick it straight up your hoo-hoo. And I'm being nice. I wasn't being nice then. And I said, that me and that boy just went out there and stole the show. And y'all go follow it. Y'all go follow that. You know, that was a big thing back then, stealing, taking the roof off. And me and Benoit took the roof off, brother, because we had plenty. We wrestled each other and against each other in Japan on two or three tours. I was with him in Japan. That's where I knew him. And, But anyway,
good hand.
Good hand.
Yeah, Chris Benoit, Nancy and that little boy, you know, I don't believe all the garbage they got out on that either. Opinions is like a-holes. Everybody's got one. But you take a guy like Benoit, he would have fought a buzzsaw for that boy. Okay. And I don't believe it at all. I believe that somebody else did it. But anyway, I'll do the rap.
Let's wrap this bad boy up. Talk about the book, where everybody can get it, and why everybody should get Wrestle Black Bart.
I want to this dead gum book right here to me. Like I said, it means the world to me. But you can get it at Wrestleville. You can get it at Wrestleville.com. You can get it at Amazon. Amazon, that's the right one. Get it at Amazon, you get it at Wrestleville.com. I believe it's a good read. Even though I haven't read it, but I don't have to read it because it's my life. I mean, it's my life. Can you see that? That's just some of the pictures on the inside of it. I don't know if you can see it or not. There we go. There's no buzz for you. But the book will enlighten you about this business. It will tell you stories, and it is stories from my memory. Okay. And sometimes your memory ain't all the way right, but it's my memory. So it's right to me. Am I making sense? It's right to me. My book is right to me because it's my stories. It's my life. And it's the way I seen it and the way that I believe it went down. Just like you said, I wasn't in WWF for about 4 or 5 months. I worked in WWF as an employee for almost 14 months. So that's how long I worked for them. Not in the ring, but here again, they said when I had that belt for two or three months, but okay, I dropped the belt back to him. That don't mean I left the territory. I stayed in the territory and still worked. You know, I've worked here ever since. I have booked the sportatorium, you know, And that ain't no, the sportatorium ain't nothing but a parking lot with a cyclone fence around it. That's that where that building used to be. That's what's there. But anyway, we'll give a wrap. And the take on the book, you need to get it and read it. And subject to not subject, you know, I wrote it, and the word wrote told me off. Vinny wrote the dead gum book. I told you stories, okay? Yep. Vinny put it on paper, all right? That's what I'm trying to get across. And I pray to my Lord God that any athlete that's coming down the pikes through junior high, elementary, the whole, I played sports as long as I can remember. I was in track. I would play softball, throw all that stuff, volleyball, all that, everything, done everything I could do. With the sports, and one of the main things is, don't just get do the sports, you know. Please do get the learning. The learning is so important, and so much and more important than the sports will ever be. Sports will be there. That learning, when it comes, it goes, and then bam, you ain't got it. It's gone. Keep digging. I believe in my Savior, Jesus Christ, my Lord and my Savior. And I believe, and I ask each and every one of y'all out there to believe in Jesus Christ as your personal Savior. That being said, I love each and every one of y'all. Grab a book, read it. You'll enjoy it. It's well worth it. I think they charge $25 for it. I don't know. I'm not for sure. But and I love each and every one of y'all. And I'm my health is fine. I'm doing well. Like I said, on the 20th, I'm going to do an MRI, a special scan or something. And then on the 29th, I go and find out. I'll have something around the 29th out on Facebook. That, you know, what where I'm going with my cancer and everything like that. I want to give a shout out to Frogman LeBlanc. He's going through cancer just like I am, and he was a jobber in Louisiana and a very, very close friend of mine. And all prayers for him, all prayers and love, please, for Frogman. And God bless y'all. God bless each and every one of y'all. Bye.
Thank you, Black Bart. Thank you, everybody out there. Check out Wrestle. Go to WrestleVille.com for the book. Black Bart, thank you so much for all the time. Really appreciate it. This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two-Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two-Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron, and also check out the website TMPTEmpire.com and buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two-Man Power Trip, where the power lies, brother.